Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage.
Enterprise. Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
And hello, everybody, and wow, what an episode. Oh, my God, episode six. Brian, have you held on to your hat?
I have. My hat, it almost flew off, but yes, I've held on.
Episode six. By the way, you know what they call it in the biz? They call it 106.
106, yes.
Yeah, you know, because I...
Season one, episode six, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I call it episode six, but, like, you know, I occasionally do a little bit of... they don't tell me anything because I don't ask. I don't ask for clues. I don't want to know about the show before I see it. But some people within the Discovery universe and I will once in a while exchange an email, and they'll be like, "Well, you know, when we were breaking 106," and I'm like, "Breaking 106? That sounds like, what does that mean? I don't know." But breaking 106 means I was writing episode six.
I feel like you don't get to say that until, like, you have multiple seasons, because then you have to actually clarify which episode six you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Breaking 106, man. All right, cool. Well, listen, 106 is broken, and 106 is dynamite. The episode, I don't know how you pronounce it, Lave Leti. Leti, perhaps?
L-E-T-H-E. That's as far as I'm going to go.
I looked it up in the dictionary.
And what is it?
When I say looked it up in the dictionary, I put it into Google. I do own a dictionary, but...
That's close enough.
I knew it was something old-timey, I will admit, but I'm not... I'm embarrassed to say I didn't know it. It is a river in Hades whose waters cause drinkers to forget their past.
Okay.
Very,
I can see how that ties in.
Very, very relevant for the topics that happen in this episode. But, you know, before we get to 106, now that we broke 106, Brian, we got to talk a little bit about, I don't want to call it embarrassing, because I think that we were head faked the right way.
Yes.
We were head faked the way perhaps Captain Lorca was head faked. I want to talk about episode five and our recap of episode five, which was two podcasts ago. Because remember, the last podcast we did, Brian, was with our new best friend, Rainn Wilson.
Yes.
Which was great, and the listeners have been enjoying that. But if we go back to the tape, and I was more, you caught on more than I did.
Well,
we were talking,
mine was a skeptical kind of a skepticism, really. I mean, because I wasn't sure, but I assumed, and I just went with your, you know, your
yeah, you were like,
knowledge.
Yeah, what I'm referring to is the Klingon captain on the ship that Harry Mudd and Lieutenant Ash Tyler were trapped on, and that Lorca got kidnapped to, and then they show the female Klingon captain, and you're like, was that Laurel? And I'm like, no, that wasn't Laurel. What are you, nuts? and you're like, oh yeah, I guess it wasn't. And then we thought it was this other gal who actually we saw tonight.
Yes,
for the first time.
Somehow she was in the credits for both episodes, according to IMDb. I know you can't really trust that.
No, you can't. And we're gonna get to credits in a
will.
Moment. But so my reasoning for not thinking it was Laurel was threefold, and two of them were like, Star Trek did good. And one of them, you know, we're the official Star Trek podcast. Welcome to Engage, official Star Trek podcast. Loving something means occasionally criticizing it. And I think I have a little bit of a criticism. Red alert! So here's the deal. I didn't think it was Laurel. For one reason is I took Lieutenant Ash Tyler at his word when he said that he'd been on the ship since the Battle of the Binary Stars, which would have made it 7 months.
Yes.
And he had survived by being basically used as a sex slave by the captain. You know, they talked around it. They classed it up a little bit, but that was essentially it. And I then said to myself, well, whoever this female captain is new, because we know that Laurel and Vok were trapped on the sarcophagus ship since the Battle of the Binary Stars. They were floating in space with no dilithium crystals, and they had to eat Captain Giorgio's skull.
Yes.
By the way, Brian, we're recording this from home. My window's open. I hope people are walking by outside listening to this conversation.
Well, I don't hear any wind outside, so that's good.
I just hope they're going, what is a maniac talking about upstairs?
Let me call the police just to be safe.
So I took them at their word, and that was part one. Part two was when I heard the Klingon captain, they were torturing Lorca, you know, kind of Clockwork Orange style with things in his eyes.
Yes.
We heard this captain speak, and I did not recognize her voice. I even joked and said she sounded Scottish
or
something. Well,
rightfully so, because we actually have not heard Laurel speak English before.
Right. That was it. And I didn't realize that. I had been so engrossed in her performance and you know, been digging the fact that it's been all in Klingon that I didn't put two and two together and realize that. So, that was cool. The other thing is, and I don't know if it's a criticism of Star Trek or criticism of me or just sort of the way life is, I'm still sort of kind of getting used to the quote-unquote new look of the Klingons. I'm not anti the new look. There are some out there that just can't handle the fact that they look different. I'm not anti the new look, but I am still getting used to it. So I didn't know if it was a new creature head or not. There are not enough distinguishing marks for me to immediately say, oh, of course that is Laurel, even though she's really the only woman we've met and she has the lighter skin. But, you know, Cole's got a red X on his face, you know, so
that's,
I know that guy.
I definitely have had some difficulty discerning the differences between the some of the Klingons so far. So,
yeah. So that's a little bit of learning curve. That's a little bit of just, you know, there's nothing to do with that. But nevertheless, it's kind of embarrassing. Well, I'm not saying embarrassing, but, you know, we went to press with our recap last week. We sent it off into cyberspace, and then about 2 hours later, I was still poking around on the internet, and I saw Mary Chifo, the actress whom I am an admirer of, and she's dynamite, said something on social media, like the picture of her character torturing Lorca, and, like, you know, said something fun, you know, like, wah, 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 something like that. She said something like, oh, I love to torture this guy, or whatever it was. And I'm like, oh, my God, Brian was right. I should always listen to Brian.
Probably
it was
the first and only time so far.
Circle the date with a big red circle on the calendar. So I got had, but it leads me to the point that I'm very excited about. And episode 6, 106, does nothing to answer or to shed any more light. It just puts more fuel to the fire of the confusion, is the fan theory, which if you're listening to the show, you probably have read because it's all over the internet now. But it speaks to my misunderstanding, which is the theory that Lieutenant Tyler is not who he says he is, and that he may in fact be Vok after a transfigurative surgery, which is certainly from canon at this time period, and he's posing as a human now. And you said that yourself last week. You're like, I don't trust this guy Tyler, he got on the ship too easily.
Yes,
I think he's a spy. So now there's a lot of evidence to suggest that he is. The number one real world evidence is something that I should have been aware of, which is in the year run up to Discovery, we got to know a lot about all the actors. And at the blue carpet that I was at, I got to, if I didn't speak to them all, I certainly saw them all. And, you know, we even had a little bit of time with Shahzad Latif, who plays Lieutenant Tyler, and Kenneth Mitchell was at the, and who's Cole, he was at the Vegas convention, and he's, you know, very active on social media. And the guy who plays Vok is not. But that's cool. Not every actor is, you know. I mean, it's kind of a new thing, you know. You know, not every actor's on social media. Why would they, you know? So this fella who plays Vok goes by the name of Javed Iqbal.
The third.
That I didn't know. But if you Google Javed Iqbal, the only photos you're going to see of him are of Vok.
Yes.
And there's not a lot of information about him.
Well, to be fair, on IMDb, there are actually, I'm not sure if he is a third, but there are two other Javad Iqbals. And
I see.
So this entry is the third one, and it, again, only shows images of Vok.
Right, right. And this is his only gig, right?
Correct.
And there's not any, like, you know, there are no theater credits in Britain of Javad Iqbal at the old Vic performing as, Banquo in something. You know, he's not out there floating around. He's a man of mystery.
Yes.
That alone is not that big of a deal. New actors do appear out of nowhere sometimes, especially if it's a very physical role, Vok is not a very physical role, but under a lot of makeup. So, I mean, that alone is not nothing. But then you got to take into account the fact that the fellow who plays Lieutenant Ash Tyler goes by the name of, as we know, Shahzad Latif. Now, if you go to Wikipedia is open source. So this is not peer reviewed by any god or government. But according to Wikipedia, Shahzad Latif's birth name is not Shahzad Latif.
I didn't know. That's not one of my little facts I have.
No, you got to go to Wikipedia. And it is according to Wikipedia.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I see it now. I'm on Memory Alpha, so I see it now.
Yeah. According to Wikipedia, it says his name is Shahzad Khaliq Iqbal, much like Javed Iqbal. This seems like a dead giveaway. However, what does it say next to Shahzad Khaliq Iqbal? It says citation needed, because Wikipedia is open source, but by and large, it is fact-checked pretty regularly. You know, you put up a fake fact there, it stays for a little while, and then it comes down. Somebody catches it. You can all go to my Wikipedia page and add all the crap you want. Eventually, it'll come down. Okay, so dig this. You got to Google elsewhere. Well, who else is calling him Shahzad Khaliq Iqbal? And it's no place that, it's not like an official playbill from a play or something, or it's not an official bio. So we just don't know. It could be that some prankster caught wind of the Vok Tyler incident last week and added that name to just be a jerk, you know?
That's a good point.
But nevertheless, it stands to reason that Vok went to the matriarchs of Mokai with Laurel, and the line she said, what was it, Brian? You might have to give up everything?
Sacrifice everything.
Which would, of course, mean a lot to Vok, because he's all about the pride of being a Klingon.
And remain Klingon.
Yeah, remain Klingon is his battle cry. So what would be more devastating to him? What would be the ultimate sacrifice? Giving up his Klingon nature,
exactly.
His Klingon form. So story-wise, we're in it. But then there is the issue of this. When they escaped, they had their blasters with them, and they killed a couple of Klingons. They dropped dead in front of our eyes. Okay, a couple of pawns, they're willing to sacrifice them for the higher power. But they, Lorca almost kills Laurel, right? The bullet, phaser banks off the side of the thing, ricochets, scorches her skull. By the way, that's how we'll recognize her next time. She'll have a scorched skull.
Oh, yeah.
So would Laurel and Vok have been willing to would Laurel have been willing to sacrifice herself to get Vok on the ship? And would Vok have been willing to sacrifice Laurel?
Well,
the implication is they're falling in love also.
Yes. I think it's, first of all, it's hard to plan something like that. Like, how can you say if you're going to have Vok escape with Lorca, you know, how could you say that, you know, it's going to go to a point where Vok is going to be fighting Laurel by himself and they could just kind of fake it and knock him out rather than shoot them? And, you know, how do you say that Lorca won't be there, you know? So that's kind of up in the air, and that kind of disproves that how planned it could be.
Right. Well, then Laurel should have just never gotten
involved.
If Laurel wanted to be safe.
Well, maybe they're just trying to sell that to the audience then. I mean, this is a TV show. I mean, it is a fantastical story. I mean, we want drama. We want, you know, things like that.
This is real life. This is very important stuff. I don't know. I mean, there must have been a failsafe in place, because I think Laurel should have just stayed on the bridge, or maybe I don't know.
I mean, maybe they very easily could have gotten away with that, having her stay on the bridge, too.
Where did they get those guns from? They were the Klingon guns, right?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, there weren't any Starfleet guns around there.
Right, right, right. So maybe they were shit.
Oh, no, yeah, no. The guards come in, and they ambush them.
Yeah.
After they make Lorca choose his pain, whatever.
Right, right, right. Maybe the guns were set to extreme stun. Did we see those Klingons die in episode 5, or did they vanish?
We did see them fall down.
Did they dissolve like they do in the old days?
See, now I'm kind of remembering this episode 6 more now on the holodeck.
Basically, the
greatest laser tag game in existence, and they kind of just fade into nothing. On that.
All right, so you know what? We're not going to know until we know. But what's exciting, Brian, is that you called it, and I'm repeating it. We've heard of Chekhov's gun, and I don't mean Chekhov from Star Trek, Anton Chekhov. Chekhov's gun is a literary device where the gimmick is if you see a gun in Act 1, it goes off in Act 3.
Yes.
And now that you know, if you've never heard that phrase before, watch any movie or television show, and you'll see that it's always correct. When you see a gun at the beginning of the movie, it's going to get shot at the end of the movie.
Correct. And I think I actually used this in a text to you when I was originally talking to you about this, being that I mentioned Lorca's tribble on his desk.
Yeah.
And that how they react very violently to Klingons. So I think that's the literal Chekhov's gun here.
Yeah, it's Chekhov's tribble. It's Chekhov's tribble. And Lorca the tribble is going to flip out when it sees
Tyler.
When it finally meets Tyler, as was precedent from Trouble with Tribbles, when Arn Darvin, who was another Klingon that had had surgery to make himself look human, got ratted out by the Tribble squeaked, and they knew it was a Klingon, and then it happened in More Tribbles, the animated episode, and that's just how it works. Tribbles just don't like the Klingons, and there's, you know, in TNG and Voyager and whatnot, there were plenty of times when other characters had, you know, surgery or, you know, some sort of reconstructive makeup to look like a different race. You know, Deanna Troi looked like a Romulan at one point, and you know, Sisko looked like a Klingon. I mean, they did it plenty of times. So
yeah,
there's a lot of precedent for the makeup department. I love the idea of Tyler being Tyler being a spy, but I love this behind the scenes Iqbal stuff. You know,
well, there's actually another real world kind of little IMDb jujitsu going on here too.
Oh, tell me.
So originally, when the show was announced, they announced that Shahzad Latif was to play the Klingon Kahl, who at the time was a protege of T'Kuvma. Now, eventually, they switched it around to have Latif play Tyler, and they gave the T'Kuvma's protege the name Vok, and Kahl went to obviously be the character played by Kenneth Mitchell.
Yeah.
So there's that, and also we have to acknowledge, I mean, this is kind of minor, but Shahzad Latif's name has been in the credits of every episode. And yes, you could argue that he's a main character that hasn't been introduced yet, but what if they're secretly saying, hey, yeah, he's here and you just don't know it?
That's awesome. That's cool if it was. I mean, I remember when the change happened during production. I remember that was when, you know, when our friends over at IO9, for whom the sky is constantly falling, they were like, this show is a mess. This is a disgrace. And I'm like, you don't even know who this character is. Why do you care? So maybe that was a little tip, or maybe that was just like info that shouldn't have come out.
Yeah,
or who knows if it was a screw up or not.
It either could be some like a sloppy little mistake, or it could be like, oh, hey, wait a minute. You know, maybe we shouldn't do this.
Right, right, right. It could be they were just rewriting it at the time.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, that's the news. That's all the news that's fit to print on the Vok Tyler debates. Be that as it may, there's a whole lot of Tyler in episode 6, and he's kind of great. I'm like, he's yeah. Mr. Handsome. He's very handsome. He's flirting a little bit with Michael Burnham, which is fun. And Tilly is encouraging Michael Burnham and him to flirt.
And you see, this is the interesting thing, though. This is my main argument against the Tyler equals Vok, is that flirtation. And like, I definitely felt that they were setting up a potential romance in this episode. And I'm just thinking, you know, how, I mean, Vok and Burnham have met before, obviously, on the Klingon ship, where, you know, Burnham, you know, kind of scratched out one of his eyes and killed T'Kuvma.
Yeah.
So how could this person, if Tyler is Vok, how could he be controlling himself to the point where he's friendly and flirting with Michael Burnham because there's no way he doesn't know who it is.
Right, right, right. That's a good point. One would have to argue that he is simply a, you know, he's such a
dedicated
double agent that he's willing to just sort of suppress his natural rage, you know?
Yeah.
Also, how did he get rid of his Klingon accent? I guess he just took lessons.
Well, again, we have not heard him speak in English, just much like we haven't heard Laurel speak in English previously.
Oh, maybe that's how he just spoke.
So,
as a very handsome Shahzad Latif type guy, yeah. Well, that's a good point. But, yeah, I mean, that'll be... if he is the double agent, you go three steps down the line, he and Michael Burnham do fall in love, and then... Tyler/Vok has a crisis of conscience when he realizes that, you know, he loves her and he probably will grow to love the Federation and he won't know what to do. So, you know, we can look forward to that. Or it could just be we could have just wasted a half hour talking about this and he could just be Lieutenant Ash Tyler.
Yeah, it's very possible.
If we don't see Vok again, we're going to know what's up.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have not seen him since. And yeah.
All right, well, that's, you know, thinking caps on for Vok. And listen, you know, if for whatever weird reason you're listening to this show but haven't quite gotten into Discovery yet, I've got good news for you. And, Brian, do you know what that news is?
I think I do know what it is.
This episode of Discovery, this episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast, is brought to you by CBS All Access, which is the show, which is the streaming platform upon which... You can watch Star Trek Discovery every week, Sunday nights. It's changed my life. Sunday nights is a whole new ballgame when the new episode of Discovery shows up. Never at exactly the time it's supposed to.
It's always
supposed
a few minutes early, which is a nice
bonus. It's always wrong, but in the right direction.
Yes.
It's supposed to go live at 8:30, and usually by 8:17, 8:18, it's there, which is awesome, because that way you can watch it twice before you go to bed, you know? CBS All Access, it costs $6 a month, $10 a month if you want to do it without the ads, and you get Discovery for a few more weeks every week, and then you get every other Star Trek that ever existed, Enterprise, Deep Space Nine, the original series, you name it, and you also get... some cool movie. Everything else in the CBS arc library, CSI, NCIS, all the letters, they're all there. Plus some movies, I Love Lucy, Twilight Zone, you name it. They're all there, CBS All Access. Streaming is the wave of the future. We're getting more and more a la carte programming. And listen, I know if you're lucky enough to not live in the United States, living in the United States is great. One of the negatives is, you got to pay for your Star Trek here. If you live in Canada or Europe or Brazil or something, you can watch it on another platform. But here in the good old USA, it's CBS All Access. But I tell you, it's worth it.
It's a very small price to pay.
A very small price to pay. The first week is free. It comes out to about 6 quarters an episode. And then, at the end of November, Discovery is going to take a little hiatus. And then if you want to leave your All Access, maybe you do. And then you come back again. It's not that big of a deal. So CBS All Access is the way to go. You go to CBS.com and you figure it out from there. First week is free. Watch it on your laptop, your phone, your Roku, your Xbox, your Google Stick, whatever you got, make it happen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Engage, the official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
So, Brian, I'd like to ask you this question every time. Where do you rank episode 106 compared to the others?
And again, I'm completely unprepared for this. Next time, I'm going to be ready for this question. I like this episode. I feel like I like the previous episode a little better. But
105? Okay.
Yes.
Interesting. I think you're right, but I have some thoughts on that.
Okay.
Well, first of all, what I'm coming to realize is everything from you know, the first two live on an island. 103, 104, 105, and 106, they're kind of all one episode. They just roll right into each other.
Yeah, that is true.
There's really not a break.
It's almost like there's two episodes.
Yeah, in a way, there's only two episodes. They kind of roll right into each other. I will say that 105 last week had a little bit more, it was a little bit more action-packed.
Yes.
This week has a little bit more time to relax. I mean, a little R&R, literally in the case of Lorca and Admiral Cornwell.
They get to
go to bed. I mean, oh. So there's some of that. So it eases up on the action, but it gets a little heavier on the character stuff. And I think this is one of the best Michael Burnham episodes. We really get to get into her background.
We learn
her
a lot about her, a lot more about her relationship with Sarek.
Yeah, we go to Vulcan, too. It's dynamite.
Yes.
So we get into that, and then we also get more into Lorca. And it's becoming clear now that this is the Michael and Lorca show. Like, they're the two leads.
Correct.
You know?
Absolutely.
Saru was barely in this episode, right?
Yeah, he had, like, one line. Like, he walked into a room and then walked out, and that was it.
Right.
Actually, you know, one other thing. We have not seen Saru and Tyler in the same scene yet.
No, that's going to be the other thing. We're going to hopefully Saru meets him
and the Threat Ganglia go up.
Yeah, and what they do, Saru meets him in the door jam to Lorca's ready room, right? Shoot this like a Brian De Palma film. So the lights are dark and Saru is about to meet him and they all walk in together. Cut to the back of Saru's neck as his Threat Ganglia emerge. Cut to the desk and they're surrounded by two alarms, and then cut to black, and that's the last moment of the episode before the break.
That would be great. That would be fantastic way to end an episode.
That'll be fun. Let's start at the beginning then, because the first thing that happens in this episode that I really loved, and it was a little bit outside the story, you're seeing Michael and Sylvia Tilly jogging, and the
in their
music,
disco shirts.
They're wearing the disco shirts, right? Which is funny because I'd seen pictures of those shirts, and I always thought they were a joke. I thought they were
fan-made thing, yeah, kind of poking fun, yeah.
Yeah, a thing like on the set. You always see people on the set wearing hats like that are jokey related to the production they're on. But no, those are in-universe. You know what?
I kind of want one now.
I do too. John Van Sitters, are you listening? You know where to send them. Brian, you get your specially made in plaid. They look great. And then, but was the music, was it was like kind of like almost like 8-bit. You know, like it's, if you go back and listen to the music while they're jogging, it's kind of like electronica, goofy 8-bit, like workout music.
I actually didn't even notice that.
You got to go back when you watch it again. When you watch it again on your big screen
on Sunday,
you can hear it sounding really cool.
I'll crank the volume and wake up my son.
Yeah, so it looked cool. It looked cool, and I find Tilly to be really adorable. You know, I mean, that's why they put her there. She's a plant. You're supposed to find her adorable.
Yes,
it worked.
She is absolutely growing on me a lot. I think I was a little iffy. I was a little thrown off by her in the first in episode three, but she's grown on me immensely. And I've seen some people criticize her a little bit in a way. I've seen people call her the Wesley Crusher of the show, which I don't. Again, I think we've had this discussion that you said that you never saw the all the hate, and I kind of don't see this with Tilly.
Yeah, I have not. I'm curious to read more of somebody calling her the Wesley Crusher. I mean, I get it, but and so clearly do the writers of this. I mean, it definitely does fill a slot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's always done that, you know. You know, what's interesting, this show's crew doesn't fill the slots the way the other ones did. Like, who is the Spock on this? Is it Saru? Not really. Like, at first you think it is because he looks weird and he's an alien, but his attitude is not Spock-like at all. He's an outsider, but he's not like the Spock Data 7 of 9, you know, type. Spock, Data, Seven of Nine, Odo, right?
Yeah.
That was the character.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know who.
There really is none on there. Because you want to say it's Michael Burnham then because she's half Vulcan, but she's got so much other shit going on. You know, she's escaping her past and she's the mutineer and she's a genius.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Like, I don't think, I mean, I guess Saru is the closest thing, but it doesn't quite fit as well as those other characters did.
I think what it is they made a concerted effort to break that mold.
Yeah.
I mean, they want the show to be a little different. You know, the captain is not a Kirk, Picard, Sisko type. You know, maybe Giorgio was, but she's now been eaten by Klingons.
Yes.
Stamets is not lovable Chief O'Brien or Scotty,
although he was noticeably very casual in his one scene.
He's got the spores in him now,
which was, in episode I thought was six. A fantastic little nod to show a shift in his personality in a sense, but while keeping it a little more on the subtle side.
Yeah, no, he's flying on spore drive, and he's like, "Hey, man, that sounds groovy."
Yeah,
it's kind of ridiculous. It's awesome. So no, he's definitely changed, and we've yet to see any of his mirror. You know, maybe it's the mirror universe, maybe it's not. We don't quite know yet. That didn't show up at all in 106. There's too much else going on. Well, anyway, the thing that I dug so much about the first scene was they're jogging. I love. I think Tilly's really cute. I think Michael Burnham is a wonderful character, and I just like seeing them be friends. Maybe that's dorky of me and hokey, but I like seeing them be friends. And then one of them mentions the Enterprise, and I believe it's the first mention of the Enterprise so far.
Definitely. Yeah, that was the big one obvious name drop in this episode.
Yeah, they're like, someday you'll be the captain of the Enterprise. I'm like, ah! So that was pretty exciting. And then I gotta say, again, now I'm loving the show, you're loving the show. I dismiss criticisms of Tilly being a West Crusher, but I do have to say, there has been an ongoing debate about whether the show makes sense as a prequel or a sequel or a sidequel, or should it have been in the Kelvin timeline or whatever. My wife's watching this. She's watched every episode.
Okay.
She's seen scenes with Sarek, and I've explained to her who Sarek was, but you know, her head's not into it. So Tilly says the Enterprise, and she says to me, "Wait, when is this set?" And I'm just like, "Ugh." And she's like, "Don't sigh at me." And I'm like, "Ugh, you've watched every episode." She's like, "Is this set during the new movies?" And I'm like, "Ugh. You know, why you got to do that?" And I then had to explain where it was set. I said, "It's a prequel. This is 10 years before Captain Kirk, the original Captain Kirk. I know it looks different, but that's life." And she's like, "Oh, okay, got it. So what I've come to accept is their casual fans have no idea when this is set in the timeline.
It's very possible. I mean, I don't think they necessarily have really said much of that in the show explicitly, which is surprising because I feel like they've been very obvious with other things. But really, that was part of the marketing and the promotional material, saying that there was before the Enterprise.
Because they were talking to the fans, to the hardcore nerds like us. But to my wife, who ironically is married to this maniac who goes to Star Trek conventions all the time, she knows it, but she was like, "Wow, when is this set? What's going on?" You know, she's looking up from her magazine trying to figure it out. So is this a problem? Not for me, because what I can put it together. And I guess it's not really a problem to casual fans either, because she's been enjoying every episode.
Yeah.
You know, and she even got like Mirror Universe when she saw Stamets look in the mirror, and she's like, "Oh, look at that spooky thing like from Twin Peaks." I'm like, "Yeah, in the mirror." And she's like, "Oh, yeah, like the Mirror Universe." So she got that. But she did not know that this was 10 years before Spock's beard in the Mirror episode. It just didn't connect. That mycelium spore tunnel did not reach its other end of the spectrum there. It just did not connect. So that's just my note back to CBS and to the show. It didn't quite work. The experiment is 85% there. Doesn't mean the show isn't awesome, but I'm just being realistic that My wife had no idea when this was being set.
For me, I'm a big comic book reader, and I mean, obviously, all those characters were created, you know, 50, 60 years ago, and
Right. They
make it seem like it has been 10 years since they've, you know, started.
Right.
So I'm kind of used to accepting things fitting in weird ways, and it just doesn't bother me. I realize the, you know, there need to be some exceptions made in order to make a good story, you know?
You got to do it.
Yeah.
You got to have an occasional crisis on Infinite Earths to make it all come together. You know, you and I get that. And I think, I mean, the point is, like, my wife just didn't care. She was like, oh, when is, like, I'm confused for a second. When is this? And I explained, she's like, oh, all right. You know, the hardcore fans get it. And maybe some are a little annoyed, but they get it. Casual fans are just like, this show's cool. Why is he moving in the mirror? What's the deal with spores? Saru is awesome. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just kind of funny to do like a little bit of a post-mortem on all this.
Yeah.
It's just kind of neat. But the other thing that was really cool that came up right then is the way the nebula looked, right? When they go to the nebula and when Sarek's ship is trapped in the nebula, it looked like a Christmas tree.
It did. I can see that.
It looked really cool. Like, we've seen a lot of nebulas on Star Trek. You know, they're usually purple. They're not green and purple and red and orange and all that stuff. I thought it was really cool. So that looked neat. And the planet Vulcan looked real. The Vulcan sets looked great.
Yes,
graduation.
It did.
Looked really cool. And then, though, what did you think of the special effects of inside Burnham's mind, inside Sarek's mind, when they do the mind meld? And she's like walking through space.
I felt like that was very like trippy and psychedelic. It was a little odd. I've actually seen some complaints about that as a plot device. The mental connection. It seems a little hard to swallow, I guess. Which, I could see that. But I'm just kind of going with it. And you know, that looked a little trippy.
Yeah, it was a little Doctor Strange-y. I thought it was pretty neat. And then they're fighting Matrix style.
Yes.
I mean, they explain it away at the end with the Katra and whatnot, and the fact that it was not Klingons that attacked the education center. It was radical Vulcans.
Yes, I found that very interesting.
Big twist. Big twist. And Enterprise had some radical Vulcans in it, so not out of the realm of possibility. I thought it was really... really nifty twist. I also liked how Lorca smashed a fortune cookie with his fist.
He did.
Because you've been really into the fortune cookie stuff. You've mentioned it a lot. He's got his fortune cookies.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting little character quirk. I mean, like, have you ever seen fortune cookies on a screen in any show before? I mean, it's like calling out to you.
No, I mean, maybe in a romantic comedy now and then when they go out to dinner and then they, you know, there's like the big finish and then like, should she go back to him and she cracks open the fortune cookie and it says...
Oh, yeah. Okay. So maybe you've seen like a single fortune cookie, but this is a bowl of fortune
never.
Cookies. It stands
never
out
in
to
life.
Me.
I've never even seen a bowl in life like that. I went to a fortune cookie factory in San Francisco once.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's in deep in the heart of Chinatown. You go into like this room and for a dollar, they can make one for you right there.
Oh, wow.
This old man, he's got like this goo. He's got like this, so it looks like pancake batter and he like... puts it over like a drill and he like goes whoop and it turns into a cookie and then he slips a piece of paper in there and then you give him a dollar. I have a distinct memory of that. And there was a line out the door. It was like tourists out the door. They all want their dumb fortune cookies.
So what I've learned here is we're both fixated on fortune cookies in some manner.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, eventually it's going to, I mean, I think we saw it. I think we already got our payoff, which is when he was angry, he smashed his fortune cookie. Now, the other thing is there was another criticism that I read there's some people who really just can't handle that Lorca is bad, you know? Like, it's anti-Star Trek. This is not Star Trek. There's a couple of very small percentage of maniacs on the internet that like to scream about this. And to which I say, there have been bad captains since TOS, you know?
Of course.
There have always been evil captains that Kirk would then outsmart. Evil admirals, well, not evil admirals, but bad admirals. Bad admirals. Admiral Jellicoe, you know, a real jerk. So now we're stuck with one. We're witnessing one from day one on Discovery, not on the Enterprise, which is the flagship. And clearly they would not allow somebody who was a loose cannon. But they have this guy on Discovery. Now, what's really awesome is the whole arc with Admiral Cornwell. She's there to pull the leash back a little bit. Yes. She's recognizing that he is becoming a bad captain. Now, adding a little fuel on this is that they're, in fact, romantically involved, which is, you know, an unexpected twist, but that's a lot of fun. But she's there to admonish him. And she says something that I found really gratifying was, like, how the hell did you allow Stamets to shoot himself up with that spore DNA? This violates everything about our code of not tampering with eugenics.
Well, I mean, I don't think he ran that by anybody. I mean, I think he just
Right. No, Stamets didn't. But the thing is, well, Lorca's still using
on the ship at the time.
Yeah, no, he wasn't there. But the thing is, Lorca's still
responsible
using,
for it. Yeah,
he's responsible, and he's still using Stamets's spore powers to propel the ship. But I just found it really great.
Are they? Have they done this, any jumps since then?
You know what? Legally, if this was a courtroom, I could not say yes, as I do not have evidence beyond a shadow of a doubt because we didn't see any. But I think the implication is that they probably have. Because they've been in the thick of battle for the last few weeks.
Well, no. The little montage of their accomplishments was the previous episodes. I mean, I don't think they showed much of anything in that regard. So, I mean, I don't think there's anything telling that they have used it since, or they've solved how to.
It's possible. You're right. We don't know for certain, but for all we know, it's only been used. Stamets's spores were only used once.
Yes.
To save him. It's possible. But the larger point I wanted to make was there were some naysayers who were really adamant that, you know, ever since the eugenics wars and Khan and whatnot, Starfleet would never allow any sort of genetic tampering, you know, because it also goes back to Dr. Bashir and all that stuff. And they're right. And it was not discussed last week. It just happened. And then in the interim between 5 and 6, there was one essay on IO9 flipping out about this. And what I found very gratifying was, like, had that person just waited, you know, 10 minutes into episode 6, and it's addressed. So now they have to issue a retraction, because everything they were annoyed about is you know, they're right. You know, that essay was correct, and that's why episode 6 opens with Admiral Cornwell saying, "What the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, we got to look out for you." And then, you know, there's this great interplay between the two of them. They get romantic, which is nice to see. And then she's going to go rat him out. And then there's the switcheroo. And then the ethical dilemma, this morality tale. It's not like Lorca's killing her.
No, but, I mean,
he's not going out of his way to save her either.
No, he's nudging, I think. I mean, and you can't guarantee the outcome, but I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that that's what would have happened.
That he is.
Oh, no. The outcome on what was the planet? I forgot the planet.
I wrote it down because it had a cool name and those aliens look great. Hold on. The Elders of Khenkri 4.
Khenkri 4, yeah. So I think that was a very expected outcome. That he probably said, like, oh, yeah, this is not going to work out right. So,
Wait. You're saying that you think that he knew that she was going to get attacked before she left for Khenkri 4?
No, I think he probably had a hunch that there's a high probability of this going wrong.
So he knew that if Sarek was well enough to travel, he would be sending Sarek into danger also.
Well, I've been kind of debating that myself, is that had Sarek gone, would the outcome have been the same or not?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, they laid a trap.
They even say that because Cole, is it Cole that shows up? I know Dennis shows up there.
Yeah, Cole's
but
like,
he said,
I
like,
was
oh,
expecting,
I was expecting a Vulcan ambassador, but instead I get a Starfleet commander.
What's the deal with the Elders of Khenkri 4? They're these giant white robes and silver orb faces. They looked awesome.
They did look pretty cool, and now they're dead.
Before we get a chance to look at them, they're dead.
Yep, we don't hear them talk. We just see them stand there. They don't even move, I don't think. They just
stand there. The Elders of Khenkri 4. They can't move. They simply hover. They simply hover, and you pay respect, unless you're a dirty, no-good Klingon, and you murder them where they stand.
Yeah.
So, he is not going to rush into action. He's not using his spore drive. He's going to let her figure it out. He's going to let her dangle. What he's going to do is is going to let fate play out. And if she dies with the message of, you know, we must take Lorca out, he's all right with that. And that is, I'm ready to say right here and now, an ethical breach.
Yes.
It's too much.
It is too much, yeah. The fact that he was all gung-ho about going to get Sarek against Starfleet's orders, and that he has the opportunity to potentially rescue a former love interest, even.
He's like,
nope, sorry, no, not going to do it.
It's wrong. He's evil.
Starfleet code and all, can't go.
No, he's gone too far.
Yeah.
He's gone too far. But what's worse is he has grown to really admire Michael Burnham, and now Michael Burnham is in a place of emotional disarray. She has a void that needs to be filled because she's discovered that Sarek has betrayed her. We'll get into that in a moment. She's discovered Sarek's betrayal. She needs a father figure.
Yeah.
And she turns to Lorca, who needs a protege figure.
Yep.
And he is saying, I'm making you my second science officer. And she says yes. And she
very quickly says yes.
She's kind of got stars in her eyes.
Yeah.
She's not falling in love in a romantic way.
No.
She's falling in love with the relationship, and Lorca is really pulling the strings because she's given it all to him, and he's not being totally honest with her.
Yeah.
Michael Burnham is like, yes, I'm ready to work with you. And he's like, I'm baiting you. I'm tempting you.
Do you think at all that Lorca's interest in Burnham is potentially as like a patsy for his actions? To pin stuff on,
because
clearly a lot of people blame her for the war, and it was like, well, I had this mutineer on my ship. I mean, of course things went wrong.
Yeah, that's great. He's so clever. And
yeah,
you're so clever for figuring out. I don't trust you at all anymore. right. She's perfect to have around because anytime anything that goes south, he can just say, blame
mutineer.
Her.
She did it.
Yeah, you were gonna send her to a penal colony anyway. Send her twice.
But still, even with the breach of ethics, I still find Lorca a fascinating character, and I still
want
to see a lot more.
Right, yeah, and he's also a, you kind of get it. I mean, in time, like, it's Patton, right? General Patton did some pretty crappy things, but he won the war, I'm basing all of my knowledge on Patton from the movie Patton, so, I'm not really a scholar on this, but... he did some things that he did the job that needed to be done.
Yes.
He's one of those guys. You got to do what you got to do. So it's tough, and they got to defeat the Klingons here. It's tough. Now, the other big thing which I alerted to a minute ago was the situation with Sarek, and they finally bring up the S word. They don't say my brother, my half brother.
Yes.
Spock, his name is said. And what Sarek did was pretty shitty. The elders said you're only going to get one of your two mongrel kids into the good college. You can only send one of your kids to day school. The Vulcan Academy of blah, 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 whatever it is.
The Vulcan Expeditionary Group.
Yeah, there you go. You can only send one, and he chose his blood relative, which, I guess he had a Sophie's choice. He had a Spocky's choice.
No, I don't think he had a choice at all, actually. I think he was absolutely forced into that because...
Oh, yeah?
If they were kind of questioning his experiment with humans, quote-unquote, and then I think if he chooses the full-on human, they're gonna take that as a mark against him. Like, they have to choose... He had to choose the one that had some Vulcan blood in
him. Wow, you're way, way, way too forgiving. I say that he was given a Spocky's choice... And what he did was he had Burnham in front of him, and he knew that she was good enough. He had the concept of Spock, who was still too young, 4 years away or whatever, and still put it, doubled down on that he's going to be a worthy contender. And then, of course, the joke's on him. Spock chooses to go into Starfleet anyhow. So, man, does Sarek
have
that on his
think,
face.
I think that was a nice kind of nod to the potential relationship that Spock and Burnham might have had, that she said, I feel bad that Spock is maybe that I felt bad that, my half sibling or step sibling didn't get to do this. So I'm going to go follow in her footsteps.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
It's a kind of nice, retcon in a way.
Yeah. Well, here's what I can tell you. I have not yet read David Mack's Desperate Hours yet. I'm probably going to read it during the break between...
That's a good idea.
...episode season 1 and season 1.5.
Let's review a chapter every week during the break.
I haven't read it yet, but from what I'm told, I don't know, is this a spoiler? Spock is in the book, you know?
Okay.
The book is set on Giorgio's ship, on the Shenzhou, and Spock is in there, and you get some scenes of Michael and Spock.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll learn more about... I've had it sort of explained to me in broad strokes, but I haven't read it yet. You know, there's going to be more of that. And, you know, it's great that this scene is in there in this episode. And, you know, who the hell knows? 3 seasons from now, we might get some Spock action. You know, you never
Maybe.
Can tell. You never can tell. So, but, you know, it's tough going. I mean, at the end of the day, what Sarek did was he lied. I mean, he lied to his ward, as he calls her. He lied to his daughter. And Vulcans are not supposed to lie. You know, that's like the one thing about them is that they cannot lie. You know, there were so many, which of course means that Spock lied many times over the course of the series, but they always bent it in a way that like, technically, I was merely implied that blah, blah, blah. So, but you know, that's sort of a basic thing is that Vulcans do not lie. So Sarek, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Well, but he clearly has a lot of guilt over it.
I know. It's his dying thoughts. Yeah. It's his dying thoughts. And he gushed so much green blood.
Yes.
The most green blood we've ever seen on Star Trek was on this episode. It was, you can only see like little streaks of green.
I'm pretty sure this is the most blood we've seen in any Star Trek series at overall, you know, I mean, so far yeah. with all the mangled bodies on the Glen and
oh, forget about
and
it.
The war
yeah.
stuff and all these bodies floating in space.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some notes on the Facebook page, people complaining about the use of an F-bomb last week.
Yeah.
It's like, there was a guy whose spine was ripped out of his back
yep.
on the Glen. Yep. That, you know, that's okay to watch with your kids, but somebody says this is so effing cool.
You know what? I actually saw a guy on Reddit. He actually explained why how he had a problem with the F-bomb, but that his young son was able to determine the difference between real life and fantasy violence. And I'm like, ah, I think that's a stretch.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, look, you can watch. When I was a little kid, my parents would sometimes take me to not adult films, but films for adults, you
yeah.
know?
Like you saw PG-13 when you were like 10.
Yeah, and they would say, I remember my parents saying, like, you're going to hear some language that you were not to repeat at home or else you're never going to get to see one of these movies again.
Yeah.
And that's how it works.
That's fair.
You know? Other notes I have. So when Burnham goes into her... they use the machine from Inception to get her into...
Yes.
Like, what the... like, Stamets tries to explain... That was some quality techno babble.
Yes.
They're like, how can we get her meld? How can we increase the power of her meld? It's like, well, we can include a booster, blah-ba-da-blah-ba-da-blah. I'm like, oh, God. What are you babbling about?
Yeah, that was an extreme case of...
And then it was like, and then what is it? Like, here, put on these headphones and that'll get you there. It was ridiculous. I mean, but that's, God bless it. That's Star Trek.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm totally fine with stuff like that. And I'm happy that they attempt to explain it in whatever convoluted way than just saying, oh, yeah, that works.
Yeah, they used a repeater.
Yeah.
You know, they used it, you know, you can mind meld over X amount of feet as seen in a preview, you know, and. The episode Spock's in the jail and he uses a mind meld on the Kelvins and he gets out. You know, you don't have to be touching the guy, but you know, if you want to really send it far and wide, you need a repeater. You know, you need a loudspeaker, whatever it is. So they hook her up to the Inception machine. I love that. And then the scene where Lorca and the Admiral are before the romance, they're having like a quiet drink.
Yes.
This Jason Isaacs guy, he's a handsome fella. He's got like a John Hamm thing going on, right?
Yeah, I could see that. It's funny. I've been hesitant to mention this show because, you know, it was kind of obscure. But on Netflix, there's the show called The OA that he was also a villainous character sort of.
Oh, I didn't know he was on that. You know, I've been wanting to watch the OA. I thought it was called The OA, like Green Lantern. But I've been meaning to watch it.
I said that initially before I watched it as well. But I know it's The OA from watching it.
Because I like the woman who wrote The OA made a movie called Sound of My Voice about 5 years ago. and sound of my voice is terrific. That's
I have not seen the movie, but I know she's very into like sci-fi and sciencey stuff. So
sound of my voice is really low budget sci-fi, but it'll screw you up, man. Yeah. That's a great. So Lorca's on the OA.
Yes, he's a very major character, and in a way, he's a very morally conflicted character as well. But he was Jason Isaacs is excellent in the show.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when he was like, he's like drinking a scotch in this, and the shooting, the lighting is all, I'm like, this guy is like a space John Hamm, you know, space Hamm. He looked really handsome. The other thing, a couple of things I wanted to mention, to wrap it up, one note which is very positive, something new that we've never seen on Star Trek before, but I like the way it worked out. The replicators tell you the nutritional content of your food.
Yes, I wish we had that in real life.
Very, very handy thing. I don't know if I would want that in real life because, you know.
Oh, and then I guess I have the guilt of getting the horrible things.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I want, you know, one chunky bar, please.
Yeah.
The chunky bar contains blah, blah, blah amount of sucrose and blah, blah. Oh, boy.
High fructose corn syrup.
Nah, chunky bar, man. That's Nestle. I got nothing but pure sugar in that. When's the last time we had a chunky bar there, Brian?
I do not know.
Have you ever had a chunky bar?
I've definitely had a chunky bar before, but not for a while.
It's
you don't see them around. I don't. Do they even make them anymore?
Oh, they do. They of course. They
I don't
do.
See them in any of the delis around here in New York City.
No, I get them here. I get them here.
All right, you have to show me next time you're in the office.
I'll bring you one. Now, there's the deli near my house, the Superior Deli on 30th Avenue in Astoria, Queens. They have chunky bars there for a dollar. The reason why I like them is the reason why many people don't like them. I find the mix of chocolate and raisins to be quite delicious.
Oh, you know what? No. You know what? I don't like raisins and things. I will eat a box of raisins. You put raisins in anything, I'm like, I don't understand why. It just doesn't make sense to me.
This is why the chunky bar is the least, it's like the Filet-O-Fish. It's the least ordered thing on the menu. The other thing is the Cadbury fruit and nut, which is basically the Cadbury fruit and nut is just a straight chunky bar. A chunky bar is a big square, and the Cadbury fruit and nut is chocolate with peanuts and raisins.
Okay.
And it's, I don't know. You know, I'm going to bring you one next time. Anyhow, you're going to try it.
All right. I will try it. I will try it.
Yeah. But that's the way it goes. Any other points you wanted to bring up in episode 106 before we take a break?
No, I think that's really it. The only other thing I've written down is we saw Amanda Grayson for the first time. Mia Kirshner.
Yeah.
That was nice. I mean, she didn't have too much to do, but you know, it was nice to see her.
You know, other than the episode Journey to Babel, whoever plays Amanda never has much to do.
Yeah. She's a fairly established actress, I think, though, in television.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. She's lovely. But, Amanda is – the character of Amanda is great in Journey to Babel, and then she's kind of just been kind of wasted since then. But, you know, maybe we're going to see more of her. I hope so.
Yeah, I expect we'll see more of her. And I like you said, I guarantee we will see a young Spock at some point. Maybe not this season.
Oh, no, not this season.
Not this season.
When things get weird in season 3.
Yeah. You know,
let's worry about that when we get to it. Other cool programming notes. It was really great that we had Rainn Wilson on, and we had also Anthony Rapp. We're doing our best. We're going to try and get more Discovery guests and talent on the show, but we're going to make an effort, listeners, not to do it over the phone because it always feels a little rushed, you know, it's never the best over the phone. So we're really going to try and get them in the studio in New York. We're working on something for early November. Keep our fingers crossed. And then, you know, as time goes on, we're going to try and get more of them. I mean, naturally, eventually, we're going to have to get Sunuko Martin Green on the show more than just on the blue carpet. It'll happen in time. But until then, you know, until we can do that.
I hope she comes to the office.
Eventually, why wouldn't she? Eventually, you know, we'll treat her like the star she is.
We'll roll out our own blue carpet for that.
I think the carpet's already blue.
Well, we'll be in a different building by then.
Yes, that's right. We'll be in the hip downtown building.
That is correct.
Yes, friends, deck 44 is moving.
Yeah, we'll be deck something else.
What floor will we be on?
I have no. I want to say 12.
Deck 12.
Deck 12.
It's got a nice ring to it. Deck 12.
Yeah.
Deck 12. Yeah, in a couple weeks, right?
Yes.
Listeners, do you care about this?
No. There's no way anyone cares.
No, listeners should know. Listeners should know that Deck 44 is in the heart of Midtown, thumping heart of Manhattan. If you've never been to New York City, but when you think, close your eyes, listener who's never been to New York City, and I say, New York City, what do you picture? You picture Times Square. You picture all the lights. You think of the ball on New Year's Eve, all those people, the Times Square, which is really a rectangle. It's not a square. That is where Deck 44 is. It's a block away. It's on the very, you go to the very northern edge of Times Square, and if you're facing north, you make a right. So that means the northeast corner of Times Square. You walk half a block, and if you walk half a block more, you got the second thing you think of when you think of New York, which is Rockefeller Center.
Yep.
In between Rockefeller Center, which is where the Christmas tree is and NBC and all that stuff.
Radio City Music Hall.
Radio City Music Hall. In between Times Square and Rockefeller Center, what do you got? Brian's office. With Cheerio crumbs on the floor.
Yes.
And
plaid shirts in my drawer.
Oh, man. But not for long. We're going to move. Yes. We're going to move. All right. Listen, it's been an hour. Thank you so much for listening. Hit me more with your theories about Vok and Tyler and all of your other thoughts about Star Trek Discovery. We're coming into episode 7 where it's almost time for the hiatus. I mean,
we got three
my
more.
God, we only got two more.
Three more. Three.
Three more. Yes. Only got three more. It's getting exciting. You can hit us up on Facebook, which is facebook.com/EngageTheOfficialStarTrekPodcast, facebook.com/EngageTheOfficialStarTrekPodcast. You can hit me on Twitter at Jay Hoffman, J-H-O-F-F-M-A-N. Brian is not on Twitter, but once again, Brian, again, while one of the fans did include in a message, P.S. tell Brian he's great.
Is this the same guy or is this a new fan?
I for the sake of this conversation, let's say it's a new fan.
All right, two fans. I'll take it.
I don't actually. No, it's a new person. Of course it's a new person.
Okay.
And everyone who doesn't include that note, it's implied. It's implied. So, all right, listen, don't be like the elders of Cancri 4. Don't invite Klingons into your home without checking them out first. Be vigilant, and we'll catch you all next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.